You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. This is the week when people keep saying, remember when? Remember when we could be in public together without a mask? Remember live music? Indoor live music? Actual shows? Do you remember all the ones that we've lost? As we approach the one-year anniversary of Michigan's COVID-19 lockdown, we wanted to check in with Dr. Howard Markel, professor of the history of medicine at the University of Michigan. As one of the nation's top experts on pandemics past, he's had a lot to say about the early stages of COVID. We've been wanting to talk to him about what happens next. Howard, welcome back to Stateside.
It's great to be here.
Howard, here we are, 1 year into the COVID-19 pandemic. I can't believe we're still upright.
Well, I'm glad we're still upright, and it's hard to believe that it's a year. Doesn't it seem like 10 years, like we've been through this for so long?
It does. I am straining to remember things that happened last Thursday, and here we are now thinking about 1 year ago. Do you remember where you were when the lockdown started?
Yeah, absolutely. It is true. There's this COVID fog. I have trouble remembering things, even questions when they're asked by intrepid reporters like yourself. while I'm answering, but no, I forgot the question. Where was I? I was teaching my literature and medicine course, and then one of our students said, "Hey, we're closed at the end of our session. We're done for the term," and all of us just huddled around, looking at her iPhone, not at our own, but looking at her iPhone with an email from the president or the regents that we would be closing down that term. And we all said goodbye to one another, but we made a point to continuing the class on Zoom. But yeah, I do remember, and I was sad. I was very sad.
The thing that knocks me out is I keep hearing that there are still people just like not wearing masks, not distancing. And yes, I suppose some of them are vaccinated, but many are not. I mean, listen, you've studied so many epidemics and pandemics. Is humanity just too inflexible to make it past one of these in the 21st century?
Well, that's a great question. Particularly as everything in our society has become more politicized, it's either a yes or a no, a blue or a red. I think this pandemic has got caught up in that. And while there are a great many people who are waiting for their vaccinations or are practicing social distancing, it only takes a visit to the grocery store to see those who are incorrectly wearing their masks, like their nose is popping out. Okay, that's where some of the most dangerous microbes, by the way, that we carry exist. And other people just, you know, are scofflaws. And it's hard for me to accept, too, because it's very clear this is a socially mediated disease. Every expert, you know, from the CDC and the NIH and so on is telling us we're not out of the woods yet. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I mean, wearing a face mask is annoying, but it's not really worth going to Waterloo over. It's not a battle. So I have a hard time understanding this, too, because I've always worked with my own study of infectious diseases and epidemics with the concept that the obvious concept, at least, is that these are socially mediated diseases. And it's not like you're just, I'm only affecting me if I go out without a mask. No, you're potentially getting somebody else sick. And that we don't have a right to. We don't have a right to endanger our fellow citizens.
Have you found your way to a vaccination yet?
I have. And I guess the University of Michigan Medical School begrudgingly considered me essential enough to vaccinate me. I was way down on the list, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess you can probably work from home. Yeah.
I can. But I'm absolutely delighted to be fully vaccinated and very grateful. And very puzzled by the fact that we have this incredible vaccine and it's sort of like, yeah, whatever, you know.
Well, how are you feeling? Are you headed out to the bar anytime soon?
No. I've never went to the bars anyway. Even when I was in college, that wasn't my thing. But I would love to go to a baseball game. You know, I have tickets to opening day for the Tigers because I've split a season ticket with some buddies for years. But of course, I don't even know if I would go to a game right now, and I'm vaccinated, you know. Mm. I don't think the green light has been given. And all of our experts are telling us that. And so a year in, at least we're not as sequestered as we were, and we may be less and less sequestered, I hope, as the spring and summer goes on and more of us get vaccinated. But the real take-home message here to Michiganders and people beyond is that if you want this to be over, when it's your turn, you got to roll up your sleeve and get the vaccination.
Howard, how do you explain the risk of why it is that even though you're vaccinated, you say you don't feel comfortable going out someplace like to a ball game? Can you talk about what the risks are still, even for people who've had the shot?
Well, the risk to me personally are probably minimal, although there is still a theoretical risk that I could somehow contract the virus without symptoms and transmit it. We haven't quite worked that out. I don't think it'll be as scary as we have predicted. But then there are these variants, two in particular, that could get you sick, but wouldn't get you deadly sick if you were immunized. So I'm fairly safe. And yet I find it's almost a psychological issue when I do go to the grocery store or I walk down the street and I see somebody else, particularly without a mask, I sort of make a detour around them. And so I think what I've been thinking about and writing about is the psychological traumatic stress, if you will, of hiding from a virus for a year and waiting to come out. It's been a very stressful event for most of us. So the mere re-socialization that we're going to undergo in the office, in the workplace, as well as in the social sphere is going to take some time.
Can you give us a bit of a preview? Like what kinds of things might we expect to see or might be happening as we start to creep out of our caves?
Well, for example, the entertainment industry. Okay, they really did a great workaround with motion pictures this past year by releasing them through streaming services, whether it's, you know, the various companies, the various giant companies that I won't give a plug for. So we have found that, for example, we can do our entertainment through our homes. A lot of us may prefer after a year to work at homes. And there, a lot of surveys are saying that many, many people prefer to work at home 1 to 3 days now. Well, that's a big shift in the workplace. There might be less office space that is rented. How restaurants progress depends a lot on the daily numbers and how people are. But it's like anything, you know, if you had an operation and you were in bed for several weeks, it would take, you'd feel wobbly when you got finally on back on the ground. And I think it's sort of like that. We'll obviously we're human beings are very social creatures. We'll get back to where we were, but it'll take some time and it'll take some reassurances from our experts to say all clear.
President Biden predicts that there will be enough doses for all adults in the United States by the end of May.
Who want them?
All who want them.
That's a big clause.
That sounds incredibly fast to me. Do you feel that too?
Oh, yes. I mean, the very fact that from the point of first recognizing that this novel coronavirus existed, which is, you know, late December to late January, all the way to the point where we had a novel vaccine, a really clever vaccine, and not just one, but actually five, is a world's record. There should be parades. There should be all sorts of accolades for those scientists who develop these things in record time. And the big issue about American doses is that Pfizer didn't take federal funds, Moderna did. So a lot of the ordering was through Moderna. But even with Pfizer, they ordered too small of amount to vaccinate more than, you know, maybe 50 million Americans. And then all the other countries got in line to buy their share. So when we re-entered the vaccine line that President Biden is talking about, we had a number five instead of number one in the deli line. So we had to wait. Now that it's being, you know, manufactured for American arms, this historic partnership between Johnson & Johnson and Merck for their single shot vaccine. Well, that's like the Ohio State football team and the U of M football team getting together to create a wonderful world. You know, it's just not something that has happened in modern pharmaceutical history. So that too should be lauded. So we're there, but we're like Moses on Mount Nebo. We can see the promised land, but if you haven't gotten your vaccine yet, it's still pretty scary. But the promise that President Biden makes is a good one. And I agree that by the end of May, probably June, there will be enough, hundreds of millions of doses for every American adult, children are not yet approved, who wants one. Then we still have about 50% of America who may or may not get vaccinated, and that can harm our herd immunity, and that can create or transform an epidemic disease into what's called an endemic disease. It just pops up here, there, everywhere, causing damage for a long time.
Right.
So that's kind of the future as I see it.
We're speaking today with medical historian Dr. Howard Markell, looking back on the one-year anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic. Howard, the vaccination distribution process in Michigan has been informed by the state's commitment to make sure that people who have a whole slew of risk factors can get access to doses, or at least that's what the state is trying to do. And Dr. Khaldun has been on with us a couple times explaining how a social vulnerability index devised by the CDC has informed what the state is doing. As with all other things pandemic, it's become somewhat politicized. But could I just ask you a bit about the idea that we might need some tools to make sure that people who, say, don't have access to good health care, who have trouble with transportation, who live in very dense housing, is it new for America to think about who gets the vaccine first based on factors like that?
Yeah, that's truly historic. Whether or not it was part of a response to the Black Lives Matter protests earlier this year, as well as the Me Too movement, there has been a greater opening of things to consider that have not traditionally been in the purview of the doctor or the public health worker. And so it's been known since the 1830s when Edwin Chadwick wrote his very famous report on the laboring and poor classes in England. And he came up with the novel conclusion then, that is still true, the poor don't get sick because they're bad or unworthy. They get sick because they're poor. They're living in crowded conditions, as you said. They don't have access to health care and so on. And with such an easily transmitted infectious disease like COVID, it's not only the right thing to do for the underserved communities, it's also protecting the communities around them. So I think it's wonderful. I really support Governor Whitmer and her administration, Dr. Khaldun and others who are just doing a great job under a great deal of duress. Will it be politicized? You betcha.
I should add also that there are a lot of factors involved in getting vaccines to those who do have these risk factors. So
yeah.
Not to say the state is entirely succeeding, but that is a guiding
principle. No, the logistics are incredible because you have to have mobile people. And particularly with some of these vaccines, that's why the Johnson & Johnson is particularly intriguing because it's only one dose. So that's great. You don't have to go back. And it doesn't have to be frozen at negative 81 degrees Celsius. So you don't have to have a device carrying those frozen lots with you. So there's a vaccine corps, a federal vaccine corps akin to our census corps, could go out if they were well trained and go to these places where people are poor, don't have cars or are shut-ins or what have you. But there's no question that this is good science and good public health to include that as a risk factor for rapid vaccination.
Sure. We're finding that there have been ways for people least at risk to get themselves into the distribution of vaccines to get shots if they have the means and the tech savvy. What kind of historical precedent is there for line jumping?
Well, it's the third oldest profession in the world after medicine and prostitution. There have been rich people commandeering doctors and public health in the writings of Hippocrates. Jumping the queue is, as my undergraduate students would say, not cool. we've got to get back to a notion of a civic society, of a society that is dependent on everyone else in that society, and the various humane things we have to take care of in this remarkable emergency first before others get taken care of. So if I were 40 and without any health risks and working from home, I would sit tight, and I would encourage all your listeners to do the same. Help will be on the way, but let's get the most vulnerable vaccinated first.
Detroit's mayor, Mike Duggan, made a comment within the past week about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is just starting to make its way to Michigan, about that vaccine being less effective than Pfizer and Moderna's, and stating, therefore, that Detroit would take a pass. Howard, what should people know about that phrase, effectiveness of one vaccine over another?
Well, there's a difference between effectiveness and efficacy. So efficacy is the performance of this particular product, in this case a vaccine, under an ideal and controlled situation. Okay, so they did a small double-blinded experiment to see how effective it or the efficacy was. Effectiveness is its performance in the real world. Okay, and all the predictions are the Johnson & Johnson will be far more effective than it was efficacious in its trial. With all due respect to Mayor Duggan, you win the prize for this month's colossally stupid comment, because this now has racialized a very effective vaccine that is ready and should go into our arms. And there's always booster shots if we figure out if something didn't work up to snuff. But what I don't want to see is that this one is only being given to the poor versus this one is only being given to the rich. They're all remarkably efficacious, and I predict they'll all be rather effective. And we may indeed need booster shots every year, every other year, because of these new variants. So my bottom line is take what you can get and get as many people vaccinated as possible. But don't second rate one or the other, because they're not. They're just not.
Howard, do you see any kind of relationship, maybe an inverse relationship, between the world having the technology to come up with these vaccinations, a novel vaccination for a novel virus, as you say, so fast, and the complexity in society that seems to be preventing us from acting as a unit about this?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, and one I've been thinking of as well. In some ways, maybe the technology has worked not only to create great science and great medicine, because you had that because so many people were communicating with one another across oceans and so on, but the way we've isolated ourselves in our own neighborhoods. I mean, you can walk down the street and not see anybody. I was at the hospital the other day, and, you know, I mean, Taubman Hall was basically empty. It's this giant, long hallway. And I think this is the major crisis of most of our lives. When we talk about this 10, 20, 30 years from now, those of us who lived through it will remember it as starkly as people remember December 7th when Pearl Harbor was bombed, or September 11th, our year of the plague, our year of COVID, is something that's going to shape us in ways that we can't even predict.
Howard Markel is a distinguished professor of the history of medicine at the University of Michigan. Howard, thanks for joining us, and it's good to hear your voice again.
Always good to hear you too.